overcoming this block that I was doing to myself. So I'm going to give you a little bit of my background. It's very personal. I never talk about it because I don't want anyone to know. I had no intention of going to college. I was raised with my three sisters by my single mom, who worked as a legal secretary. And so after high school, all I wanted to do was have my own apartment. So I just needed to get a job. So my plan was I was going to follow my mom's footsteps. Right? If she was a legal secretary and could support the family, I could totally afford my apartment. So I went looking for that job. And by the way, it's actually pretty hard to get. I was competing with people who had already had some college. I had just graduated from high school. That's all I had. So I got a job at a store, and I was working with several older women who had had the same plan as me. They'd worked their whole lives at this store trying to raise their families, and I realized this isn't actually what I wanted. So I went with a friend of mine who was registering for his classes at the University of New Orleans, and just being on that campus was incredible. There was so much energy, there was so much optimism that I was like, oh my God, I should do this. I'll get my apartment for sure. So I spent the next 6 months doing all the college prep that I just skipped in high school. And I was accepted into the Department of Computer Science at the University of New Orleans. Now you might ask why I chose computer science, because I didn't really have a lot of experience in that. But I felt competent with computers. I had once sat down and programmed a little guy to run across my TV screen, right? Basic. So I figured I could do that. And I thought there's a lot of opportunity in this field. So why not? It wasn't a passion. So my first computer science course, there was just 60 of us. It's a pretty small school. And it was actually 50-50 men and women, which was a big surprise to me. I expected there to be no women, but it was 50-50. So it was pretty hard. You know, it was a struggle for me to get through. And we go to the midterm, and there's only 40 of us left. It's like, okay, yeah, it's okay, it's not just hard for me. So we get to the final, and there was just 20 of us, and I was the only woman. And I couldn't believe it. I had no idea what had happened. I thought I missed a memo. We all got sent somewhere else. Someplace better, I hope, but it wasn't here. That was the beginning of the imposter syndrome for me. Like, I became really freaked out. Like, what did I miss? I don't belong here. I don't fit in. And so what I started to do was I started to just be really conservative. I never talked in class. I never shared with my peers. I just didn't talk to people. I worked on my projects alone, and it was really isolating. College, which should be just the best time of your life, I was all by myself. That's how I felt, anyway. You know, I didn't know about the imposter syndrome at the time when I was feeling all this self-doubt. But it turns out it was actually documented in 1978 in a psychology paper where they studied women who had great accomplishments but just didn't recognize them for themselves. So I questioned my role in technology all through school. And I had this one professor in my third year. And for the first time, he treated me like he treated everybody else. And it was amazing. And I just trusted him. I loved his class. And so one day he asked the question. And I worked up the courage. And I answered it. Just spoke out in class. And he said, "No, that is absolutely wrong." I can't even really describe to you that moment. I really had to work up to doing that. It took everything I had to just stay in that classroom and make it through. I know I was the first one out that door. I know it. And I actually literally ran all the way across campus, just took off. I didn't want anyone to see what was about to happen. I made it behind the library. I sat down under a tree. And I just started to cry. It wasn't one of those pretty cries. I know it. It was bad. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't have a plan B. I had never intended to even be here. And now it was totally clear. I just didn't belong here. This was not for me. And then this guy walked across campus, and he just was staring at me. You know, like, what just happened to this girl? She is just boo-hooing. She does not look good. So he walks by, and he says, "Are you okay?" And I was like, what is he thinking happened? Do you think he even imagined that it was, I answered the wrong question. I got the answer wrong. It didn't really seem to warrant what I was doing to myself. So I said, no, I'm fine. And I thought, how many times had people answered the question wrong in the class? You know? I didn't ever make judgment on them. I didn't even think about it twice, right? I'm just glad it wasn't me, honestly. So I decided I'm going to give it one more week. Nobody ever mentioned that day to me. My favorite professor, I'm sure he does not know what he did. I never told him. So I stuck it out, and I graduated. I was the only girl in my class to graduate that year. And I thought to myself, like, what does success look like? You know? How do I know that I'll have made it? And so I thought to myself, I'll make twice as much as my mom. You know, that was my goal, right? I just wanted to be a legal secretary and get my apartment. So when I graduated, I actually had two job offers, which was better than a lot of my peers who didn't know what they were going to do next. And I moved out to California, got my apartment. My starting salary was what my mom made as a legal secretary after 20 years of work. I was in a high. You know, the beginning of my career, I just sought new opportunities. Like, if there was something I didn't know, I went after it. You know, it was exciting. A year after I graduated, I got a job offer to move to Silicon Valley, and it doubled my salary. That day, under the tree, I couldn't imagine what success looked like. When I did imagine it, I had made it 1 year into my career. Like, wow, you know? Never what I thought. I thought this was gonna take me a lifetime. So, moved to Silicon Valley, and it was the heyday, right? This is the late 90s. There was so much going on. If there was something I didn't know, man, I wanted to work at that company, you know? I stayed in research in the beginning because it was very friendly to women to work in research. But it was the internet boom. And after realizing I had passed up that $1 million job offer, you know, just 1 year before, I went out on the internet to see what that was about. Like, what did they do? I worked at NASA to learn about scale. I went to WebMD to do their data warehousing. And I went to my startup. If a problem seemed impossible, I wanted to do it. If I started to doubt myself and the imposter came up, I used my three questions. What's the problem? What's the worst thing that can happen? Is what you're feeling real or just your perspective? It wasn't just my professional career that I used these questions. It was my personal life, too. I once said, a triathlon, that's impossible. So I did one. I was like, oh, but you couldn't do another one. So I did another one. Marathon. Tried that too. I will not try that again, by the way. The worst thing that can happen, it's bad. So, and then after about 10 years, I went to Google. I wanted to see if I could be an individual contributor at one of the top companies in the Valley. It was awesome. The problems were hard, and I could do them. The people I worked with were great, and they thought I was good too. Work was the main focus of my life. Leslie said, you know, you don't have to choose. That's what she said this morning. You can have both. But I had no idea that that was true at the time. In fact, I once told my husband that if he ever asked me to choose him or my career, he was going to lose. Work was important. So then I am at Google, and I get pregnant. And I was like, oh, I'm going to have it all. I can do everything. I knew things were going to change. They absolutely need to change. And I got that. But, and I didn't think I would have to question or put my goals on the sidelines. I never thought that. I heard women say that. I thought they were wrong. They just didn't know how to do it. They should just have these three questions. Got it all figured out. So although I had asked I told my husband that I would never choose him over work, I had made a very clear decision that I wouldn't do that with my children. Right? I would always be present for my children. So after 12 weeks, had that baby. She's gorgeous, by the way. She's totally awesome. I come back to Google, to a new manager, a reorged team, all new projects. Cool, right? Clean slate. I got this. I was ill-prepared that I was not able to maintain my productivity that I did before the baby. I mean, you have to understand what happens, right? I know all the moms here is going to remember, right? You get up, you get the baby ready, you get ready, take the baby to daycare, right? Morning meetings, pumping, right? Work queue, lunch, of which, of course, you go nurse. Come back, afternoon meetings, pump, you know, wrap up the day, talk to all your peers who have no idea where you disappear to those 15 minutes because you can't tell them. Pick up the baby, play with the baby, feed the baby, put the baby to bed. That part's awesome. Check your email. Don't forget, walk the dog, go to bed, wake up the next day, do it again. Every day. It's intense. And then you add on top of that mommy guilt, you know, all the moms here is going to know. All the books tell you, you shouldn't do all these things. And I was doing all of those things. I was going to, my kid was in daycare. Oh my God, terrible mom. It's hard. And then my boss tells me, you know, you really got to travel for this new team. I'm like, oh, awesome. It's great. I can do it. No problem. Every 2 weeks, I flew to Arizona for just the day. Had to do it just the day. And when you're nursing, that's torture, right? It's terrible. And then all of a sudden, I thought, oh, this is why women leave. I never understood it until that moment. It's hard. I thought I had it all figured out. My office mate, Paul, he said to me, he says, hey, how you doing? Paul was a dad. And I just dumped on him. Man, I just let it out. I told him, I said, this is my day. Oh my God. And he looked at me kind of sideways. And he was like, it doesn't sound like you're doing less. Sounds like you're doing more. It's just different now. And I was like, oh, okay. But I had used my questions. What happened? So with a new perspective, I answered those questions again. And I realized that I wasn't really answering those questions for the new me, the working mom. I was answering them for the old me, the ideal that I had in my head. You have to answer the questions for now. You have to answer them for your current reality. We're going to change through our career. Your answers will never be the same. But I had the new questions. And what I realized that you don't have to sacrifice your goals, right? You don't have to give up on them. But you do have to be open to changing the path to get there. So I have my daughter, I also have my son, and I've been promoted twice at Google since. That's no small feet, for anyone familiar with Google. You know, it sounds so easy, you know, for me to describe this to you and say, oh, these three questions are gonna solve all your problems. It's not simple. It's not easy. I've learned a lot about myself. I've learned a lot about what I like about what I do, what I don't like, what I'll accept and what I won't accept. But so now I seek mentors out. I didn't till that point, right? I had it all figured out. But I also became a mentor because I learned a lot, right? It's not just women, also men. When you have your baby, it changes. You change, your priorities change, but you don't have to sacrifice your goals. So let's fast forward a couple of years. And then I got offered the job for Gmail. Woohoo! Brad's here. Brad actually offered me the job on Gmail. And one of the things that happened was I had to start. It really was going to challenge all of my coping mechanisms that I had, right? The way that I measured my success or how I was doing. You know, a lot of people spoke today, you know, system administrators. You know when you're responsible for production that if nobody's talking about you, you rock. If people are talking about you, shit's broken. In Gmail, I no longer had that luxury, right? Something's broken, it's in the news. Something changes, people are talking about it. You're responsible for people's email. I'm responsible for hundreds of millions of people's email. That's something that they hold dear to them. It's precious, right? It's all their friends, it's all their families, it's definitely their work. Scary, so scary. My first press interview for Gmail. Terrifying. Way worse than this, by the way. But it was amazing. And then one day a reporter asked for me by name. Oh my God. I'm just a girl, didn't intend to go to college. So when you're on the Gmail stage, one thing that I totally feared was failure, right? Now, answering a question wrong in that class, that's one thing. Having an outage in the New York Times, it's bad. But you cannot have success without failure. You won't grow if you don't fail along the way. It's how you handle it. The worst thing that can happen, it's probably not as bad as you think. So I wouldn't be here today or make it through a week if I didn't have a great support system. People who keep me in check, who remind me that what is real is not what I'm feeling. Not all the time, right? So I seek out networking opportunities as much as I can now. During a leadership training program, I was put together with a group of women, and I was like, I have nothing in common with these women, nothing. One worked in HR, one was in IT, her kids were going to college, and she was like, the most important thing to me is my family. I was like, we don't have much in common. Work is important to me. But I have to say, these people, these women, have become my closest advisors. They push me beyond my limits. And even after 17 years, I feel like I'm learning more and growing faster. If you don't have people that you can go to and talk to, not just your friends or your family, but people who understand the path that you're on, the role that you're in, you're really missing something. You need these people. If you don't have them now, look around you right now. This group of women, get their emails. Have coffee with them. You know, before your day, just get a group of women together and have coffee. It doesn't affect your work. It's amazing. It's so supportive. It will make you stronger and it will make you better. In this field, obviously we've heard it all day, it's not uncommon to be the only woman on your team. It's not uncommon to experience that imposter inside you. Even despite all your success, I still have her. She's the dominant part of my personality. It's not uncommon to think about getting out of the rat race and doing something different. But it's also not uncommon to achieve the success that you can't even imagine. I believe now that if you learn how to not be your own roadblock, all those other things we experience along the way, they're so much easier. You're definitely harder on yourself than anybody else will be. I also believe, and I have no problem with that word, that if you want to see change, you have to be that change. We have the power to help each other out, and we must regularly remember to give back. I do so because so many people have given to me. But actually, I get so much more out of it when I'm mentoring someone. You know, I've really enjoyed today. You know, it's good to be in a room of people who have that same demons, right? The same self-doubts, but also the same belief that we can change it and it can be better. Anyway, so there's a lot of people here who haven't talked. And I'm happy to answer questions. But I'd really like you to get up and just say one thing that you're proud of, that you've done, or something you want to do, something you hope to achieve. And I hope everyone who hears it tries to help them along. Give them some word of encouragement before they leave. Okay. I probably went short. But thank you.
So I think the work-life balance, which I call my work-work balance, is probably one of the hardest things that I have to handle. And actually, the only other non-technical presentation I have is on how to do that, things like getting grocery delivery. And then I look back at my career, and I realized during the first 12 to 15 years even, there's just no way I could have even had kids or even entertained that possibility. And even now when I look at it, every once in a while, I still have to pull that 100-hour work week, or I have to fly halfway across the country. And how do you manage, like, do you still work the kind of hours, or you just get more productive, or you manage a team and your job changed, or how did you really make that transition?
Yeah, so I don't actually call it work-life balance. I call it work-life management, because I'm not sure what balance looks like. What I learned and what I had to learn is that I could actually solve bigger problems by focusing my time more than I did before, when I just worked, you know, meetings all day, work all night, right? But if I focused my time, I could solve more problems. And if I engaged with my peers who were great, I could get bigger things done, right? And that's much more satisfying and actually will move you along in your career much faster. So it is hard. I do work a lot, but I have to be present for my children. That's a rule. So I set some boundaries. But I don't feel like I've ever had to compromise my goals. I'm sorry? Yeah. With the exception of being on call, I never work from home. I just don't work from home at all. I miss a lot of emails, and that's problematic, but you just set the expectations of the people around you, you know? And when you're there, you do the best job that you can, and they'll be happy for that. It's not an easy problem, right? And it's not going to be the same for everyone, right? What are my boundaries are going to be different for someone else's. But it's working. I go to work early, you know, because no one's there, and you get 7:30. Oh, wow. That is early for Google, by the way. But everyone in Zurich loves it. They get to have meetings with me before, you know, it's nighttime there. Okay.
One of the things that you said about your career was interesting is that you don't want to have Gmail in the front of the New York Times.
And actually, I don't want to.
Well, it's kind of, I guess, when I start getting problems that will appear on the front of the New York Times, I'm kind of happy. It means that I've escalated to the point where that bat signal's coming out, and they get me, and I can solve this stuff. But I guess maybe I get 25 or 30 of those where I have to go in and solve different things. But isn't it kind of nice to be at that level where you get that amount of responsibility? I mean, for me, I'm kind of happy that I worked so hard to get there. That's kind of like, boom, I made that rung in life.
Yeah, I want them to cover, like...
No, but so I go in and fix it. So maybe that's the... But you obviously are in charge of this whole Gmail empire. And that, to me, is really cool because you're obviously very successful.
Thank you. So I don't want my failures to be on the New York Times. I certainly want my product to be on the New York Times, right? It's exciting to be in charge of Gmail, right? We're one of the largest Google products. We have hundreds and hundreds of millions of users every day. That's why I say, like, the press interviews were terrifying, but it was a huge milestone for me. It was exciting, you know? And then, you know, I got to do a Sabrina Farmer in news.google.com, and there I was. And then I was like, oh my God, they quoted my stutter. It was terrible. But, you know, my mom was excited. Like, even though I thought I was going to get kicked out of all of the diversity efforts that I'm in, because, you know, the reporter said to me, you know, you did this little animation and it's really cute, and what did you think about it? Because we were actually talking about the story of Send, where Google profiled our data centers and how green they are. And I was like, it's great, it's really accessible, you know, even my mom can understand it. And I was like, oh my God, what did I say? But then my mom called me and she goes, thanks for making me look like an idiot, but I totally understood it.
Hi, Sabrina.
Hi, Brad.
You mentioned several times in your talk, which was great, about the young, scared college student, as if it was sort of an obstacle to overcome. And I'm wondering if, when you reflect back now, if it can almost be inspirational, sort of. You mentioned it so much that it struck me that maybe you can almost use it now as a way to say, look what I did, or look what I overcame.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I definitely have that imposter inside of me, and I have two ways of coping with that. One, I have my go-to, right? And my go-to is surviving that day, because it can never get worse than that. But I also gave myself a reminder. So a year after I graduated from college, I created the Scholarship for Women in Computer Science at UNO. And you know, it's definitely for the women, you know, as they're starting out their career, but it's also for me. It's my reminder that I've already accomplished something so many people haven't. So it's definitely a lesson for me and one of the reasons I shared it.
Question about when you started your career, like right now, I'm only been working for about a year, mm-hmm. and I feel like sometimes I find myself working more than I should, or maybe more, like I'm setting the expectations wrong to begin with, I guess. So later, if I want to have kids, for example, I'll be expected to work just as much as I do now. Mm-hmm. Is that a bad thing, or should I approach it differently? Like, for example, from home, I will reply emails if I'm not doing anything. I will do some work at home, mm-hmm. even though it's not really expected, but I just feel like, oh, I mean, I like what I do, why not do it now? Is that sort of going in the wrong direction?
I hear people warn people about that. I don't really think you should worry about it. What you should worry about is that if you're doing it because you like it and you're doing it because you want to, that's fine. When it's time for it to change for you, just set the expectations again, right? I worked all the time. Like an 80-hour week before children was not uncommon at all. I would wake up, have meetings with Europe, right? I was at the startup and we were deploying internationally. So I'd wake up, I'd have meetings with Europe, then I'd do my whole work day, and then Sydney would come online and I would work their entire work day, right? That was not uncommon. So
Sabrina, I heard you issue a challenge to all of us in the room. Could you repeat it? And also, could you say what you're doing in this in that regard?
Sharing my success.
Well, you said you hope that everybody would stand up and say what they want.
Yeah, so yeah, what I challenged everyone to do is stand up and share a success that you have to inspire the people around you, and also to set a goal for that the people around you could help and support and talk to. What are my goals? I intend to get promoted again, you know, which is it's a big step to be, you know, at the senior level. And you know, I want to get more comfortable with speaking in front of people, which is why I finally did it today. I also head up a diversity program in my organization. So, yeah. So I actually work for site reliability at Google, which is what the groups of software engineers, system administrators, who are responsible for production. And we don't have many women in this group, and I want to change that. So I never want to be labeled the diversity person. So when the VP was like, you know, I really want someone to sort of step up and own this. And I was like, yes. Ben, that's a great idea. Do that. I didn't want it to be me. But I do feel really passionate about this, and I know it's important for someone to own it. And so what I did instead was I went to some of my colleagues and I told them, hey, Ben's looking for someone to do this. Are you interested? And so I recruited people, and I'm actually part of that team. So I'm not doing it alone because I need to manage my work and my life. And so we work together to sort of change a little bit of changing the culture, a little bit of creating a better support system for the women in our org. And so I have goals around all of those things. I know you guys have success stories out there.
About 7 years now. I got my master's degree from Baghdad University, and I was sent to Harvard to just get training course for 5 months and going back home. But while that was in 2006. While I was in Harvard, situation back home, Iraq was really, really bad. So I couldn't go home again, and I had to stay here. So I was like, okay, let's do something useful. Okay, let's go to grad school, sounds interesting. But it was kind of challenging because I worked for 5 years as a faculty member, and switching back to being a student was such a great challenge. Plus, really, the difference in the education system was such a trouble for me. So I spent my whole first year trying to first overcome the problem of the language, English language, which was such a barrier, adjust to being a student, and filling the background. I was working really, really, really hard. And at the end, I failed to pass my comps, and I was asked to leave the program and just take a master's degree, and that's it. But I was like, you really don't know how much I work. And then at the end, you are telling me to leave. I think this is a kind of wrong decision. My advisor was such a supportive person. He really like, okay, you can submit a petition, and I'm sure everyone will support this petition. The fact that you didn't do well, although you didn't do well, but everyone in the department know really that you are such a hardworking person. And I was like, but they already told me to leave. They were like, he was like, this is a kind of formality, so you shouldn't take it as a in person. So I submitted my petition, and I got an acceptance, and I got my, a second trial, a second chance to retake my comps. It was partially my own problem. I shouldn't blame it to anyone else. But at the same time, I think they did notice that I was really working so hard. At the second trial, I managed to pass all the qualification exams. It took me an extra year. Everything kind of delayed 1 year, and this to me, it was like I'm sacrificing something, but at the end, things kind of working out for me now. And I finished my fifth year, still have 1 year to go, and hopefully, I will finish and get my degree again, and probably go home if I can do that, and continue my work as a, as a faculty member in the university. But when you said about this moment when you went, it took me like, I think, 3 days just to, kind of recover from the dramatic and the disaster kind of feeling that I had when I was told that, sorry, you can't continue. But deep inside of me, I was like, no, I know that I can do it. I know, no matter how difficult it sounds, it was really like, no way, you can't do it. But I was like, I think I can. Just give me a second try, and you know that I will work hard. And here I am, finished my fifth year, and we'll see how it goes.
Stories that I've been involved with is that I'm organizing an outreach program for women in the GNOME Desktop Project. And so far we had 45 interns either through the internships program or women interns either through the internships program or who participated in Google Summer of Code because of the internships program. So it just was amazing to see firsthand how if you reach out to women, they would get involved in something like open source that traditionally has few women just get involved in it. So I'm really passionate about like getting more students, and women in particular, college students, to contribute to open source. And one thing that everybody can help with is keep an eye for opportunities like Google Summer of Code or, like Etsy was doing grants for women to attend Hacker School in New York. So if you see things like that, really do forward them to like a computer science department in your university that you went to a women's group in your university. So like even if you like do a couple things like that a year where you forward something back to your school, it can really have like a first-hand effect where somebody will see it and somebody will participate in it. And like Sisters List is probably a good one to just keep an eye on for like what opportunities can be forwarded along.
Great. Now everyone's going to commit to that, right? Okay. Thank you guys very much.